The Guardian. Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly, an earlier appearance for the podcast this week as we run through the winners and losers from last night's Brit Awards.
Everything that felt like a dream just felt like reality, and that freaked me out more than anything. Being number one for the second week, winning an award at the Brits, having Justin Bieber say that he's a fan, dancing to Rihanna. Honestly, I'm just so overwhelmed. My dreams are real.
I'm a winner. I'm here. I'm getting recognition, just being asked to play here. So if I win something else, it's just more recognition. It's great. Thank you very much.
Plan B, apparently he's setting himself on fire, which is going to be interesting.
What's going on? I'm Dizzy Rascal. I want my collaborating with Rihanna. I'm not talking about the stage, though.
This is the Music Weekly Brit Special from The Guardian. A special post-Brits edition this week, which explains the early post. Joining me around the table to discuss the annual industry bun fight that took place in the O2 last night are Rosie Swash.
Hello.
Hello, Rosie. Grace Dent.
Hello.
And standing, but only just, Casper Llewellyn-Smith, who was the only one of us last night at the event availing himself of the VIP hospitality.
Hello. I'm still standing, just about having availed myself.
Was it good?
To some extent, I had a good time.
I heard you were on a boat going down the River Thames with James Blunt.
I was on a boat with James Blunt, Catherine Jenkins. There was rumours of two of the Wombats, but I don't know what they look like.
Wow.
And someone else. Who was the other talent on the boat? Anyway, Stella was living the dream.
I was going to say, that's living all right.
Big star.
Amazing. Yeah. Was it good? Was it enjoyable? Did you have fun?
It's quite an enjoyable event if you're sort of down the front, as I was. You know, it's a nice way of seeing a lot of pop turns who you might not otherwise trog out to see of an evening. So that was good. The food was quite nice. It was perfectly pleasant, I thought. You know, not the most memorable Brits ever. Slightly odd that it was now in the O2 rather than Earl's Court, where it was traditionally done, and this idea that they're going to focus it more on the music and make it all about the music.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure that came off, as you said this morning. It sort of fell between two stools slightly.
It did a little. I was obviously right about that. Grace, you watched it at home from the comfort of your own sofa,
yes,
as Rosie and I did.
I think that's the best place to watch it.
I think it is too.
You don't have to bother with a frock.
No.
You don't have to bother with a wash.
The first year that I didn't go was amazing. I sat on the sofa at home with a really nice bottle of white wine watching the Brits. My wife fell asleep almost immediately it started, waking up only to see Mika duetting with Beth Ditto, and said, in all honesty, went, Jesus Christ, is that Kelly Osbourne? She's let herself go. Then fell asleep again. It was the greatest thing, best Brits I've ever been to or not been to. What was your overall impression of the event, Grace?
Do you know, I know that it was serious, but I liked it. I thought that, right, I think that James Corden, he obviously went out and decided that he wasn't going to tell any jokes. And in a way, I think that's good, because these jokes, they fail.
You're
going out and... At the moment, there's this culture that you go out and you take the mick out of everybody and you push it and you push it and you know, and then the papers hate you, and then there's a big media, you know, outrage afterwards, and then everybody says your jokes were rubbish anyway. And it's like, why don't... You know, I think we got the award ceremony that we deserve.
Okay, that's an interesting...
It's like, you know, he went out there and he was sincere, and he didn't just try and tell a load of jokes that just failed because you turned them to a massive audience. And I found it quite, you know, it was quite nice when it came back from Adele, and that he had a little tear in his eye. It was all about the music, and I bought into that for about 45 minutes, and then I got quite weary.
Yeah, it got quite boring. What about the peculiar incident in which James Corden appeared to be sort of grooming Justin Bieber?
Well, this is it. You know, because he'd been quite serious all the way through, when he sat down and did that, that was just delicious. It was lovely. It was just like kind of going, how old are you, you know, that kind of like real male cougar thing. And I like that. That's kind of the thing that I would do, you know. If I would just,
I mean,
be really,
you do it, but I mean, is it appropriate
really
for television?
Well, of course it's appropriate. It's the Brits.
Rosie, you
I love how you've gone red. I should do this more often.
Rosie, you were groomed by a cougar. Rosie, you were live blogging.
I was indeed.
From home.
Not from home, from the Guardian office, which was even weirder experience.
Why were you...
My telly at home is a little bit dodgy, so I didn't want to rely on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is the recession, dream. People.
Yeah, you, Cameron's you were Britain, big on Coalition the Britain. Boat.
did you enjoy it? Did you have fun? Was it good? What was your highlight, actually? Let's ask you that.
The highlight was Adele, if I'm completely honest with you, and that came very early because I think it's an absolutely fantastic song, Someone Like You, and she sang it really beautifully. And I don't know whether she was moved by the content of the song or very overwhelmed at doing it, because you said, Casper, that she looked really nervous before.
What was nice, what was nice being there was that I was sitting quite near to where she was performing, and she was holding a position for quite a long time for an ad break before it kicked in. So she was standing there on her own, kind of very naked to this huge room of people, before the thing started, for quite a while, looking very, very nervous. But what was very sweet was then loads of people in the crowd just got quite overexcited and were going, "Go, Adele, we love you, Adele," and sort of you could see her reacting to that, and it sort of, that was quite a nice, sweet
moment. And when
moment.
You say the crowd,
and she did
mean,
look very moved.
You mean like the everybody that was on the table, like not the group that they usually have at the front?
They didn't have that group this year. You know, previously when it was at Earl's Court, they always had people who appear to be real fans, or in fact people from the Brit School, but are super excited, genuinely excited to be there down the front to create that atmosphere. And they weren't there this year. It was just industry people on tables around the performing stage. Yeah. And as Peter Robinson from Pop Justice, who was sitting beside me, said, the Brit School people weren't there because they're mostly performing on stage yesterday. All of them had their
so
turn
excited.
At some point.
That song's
yeah.
a killer, though.
Which song's a killer? What, Adele?
Someone Like You. Someone Like You, she just, you know, she's just perfect when she does that song. It's
What was great about that as well was seeing her doing it at the O2 there, rather than seeing someone who was a runner-up on the X Factor tour in 18 months' time doing that song, which you know
will
be
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yes.
you know that's going to
yeah.
be covered a million times in the most horrendous way.
But if I'm honest with you, that was the highlight for me, and then it's not that it went, oh, it was so downhill, the Brits, so it just didn't, it had no kind of high tenor to it the evening at all.
I liked
just,
The Man on Fire. He was brilliant. That was amazing. I thought that really raised the bar.
I did like the riot dancing. I also like that Take That and Plan B obviously split the cost of the riot dancing. You know, it's troubled times for the music industry. Why not?
I like the sheer glee that gripped the nation when the camera rested on just Mumford and Sons, all just in a group, kind of looking like the Dukes of Hazzard, all kind of clutching one ear, and you thought, oh, here we go.
And it was amazing.
Here
at
we
that,
go.
At that point, we'll talk about Mumford in a bit, but at that point, such a livid wave of hatred towards Mumford and Sons erupted on Twitter.
Yeah.
The Twitter broke. TweetDeck went down. My API was strangled to the point where I could receive no more. It's like, wow, people hate Mumford and Sons so much.
They really do.
That they broke the internet.
They missed the trick last night. I just thought it would be much better if they had come on and done with big hay bales, with kind of, you know, straw hats on, with a bit of corn hanging out their mouths, and they'd done the kind of overstaged Brits over the top interpretation.
They should totally have done that, and they could have done I Am a Cider Drinker by the Wurzels.
Yes.
Instead, one of them thought, I'm not street enough, where's my baseball cap?
Yeah, he looked like Cletus or something, didn't he? Bearing in mind he went to St. Paul's or whatever. Anyway, look, it's fair to say Mumford & Sons, Flaming Man, Adele aside, the Brits this year belonged to this man.
I was unknown when I started making Discovery. I was searching for collaborations. I was going into the studio every other week. Like on a non-serious note, halfway through the process, I may pass out. My life completely changed. I've got so much more to talk about. I mean, before I released the album, you know, it hadn't gone number one. It hadn't got platinum. I hadn't sold out a tour. I hadn't won a Brit Award. So I've got so much. Two Brit Awards. So I've got so much to talk about. So fingers crossed, the second album is just as good, but I've got very, very, very high hopes.
No. Hey, whoa, tiny temper there on being a breakthrough success. He was getting tipped beforehand as the person to watch. Four nominations, he picked up two. Best breakthrough, best single for Pass Out. Well-deserved awards. What's the general consensus around the table?
I am happy for him.
Well, we're all happy for him. I mean, I wouldn't wish him any ill.
The thing is about the his win is it's, you know, I'm not... Dizzy Rascal has obviously done very well in the Brits over the last couple of years, but I think it says a lot about... Just we're finally ready in the UK for rap of some description in the charts.
Well, homegrown.
Right? Homegrown, yeah. and so in that respect, it's really nice to see him do it. But we had quite a long discussion about the Tiny Temper during the first album award debate, didn't we? And the consensus among us was that it was an album a little bit. In the same way that I feel about the Brits, that it's fell between two stools, as you said. It, in his album, avoided all the other areas that rappers usually talk about in lieu of talking about that one thing that they're obsessed with, which is the struggle to be successful and to maintain success against adversity of haters.
Yes.
And so as an album, it wasn't for me, but it's the Brit Awards.
A lot of haters out there, Rosie. You should read the comments about this blog. should he? What were the other two things he was nominated for? Can anybody? I've got the things. Yeah,
I like the fact that he said he told Radio 1 that he might take the bus home afterwards because his mum lives in Plumstead. And I think, you know, it's true that it's good that British rap is breaking through, but it's also true that it's very British in that respect. I mean, yeah. I like that whole thing about him.
Are you a fan, Grace?
It leaves me a bit cold, to be honest. I mean, everybody likes Pass Out, but, you know, after that. I enjoyed him at the awards because every time he won something, there was just this real sense of joy and excitement from his table. I loved it when he got on stage and then started to demand that Labyrinth was brought from somewhere. I can only imagine Labyrinth was in the toilet.
Yeah.
I'm not really saying, upset. You know, he probably, yeah, and it was, I'm not going to go on without Labyrinth.
And then everyone was like, oh no, he's really not going to go
really
on.
He's really not coming. But I wondered how long he would keep that up. But no, I mean, these kind of moments really made the ceremony. I mean, it's a bit like when Bieber decided to bring his international press guy up.
Yeah, yeah, that was absolutely
come
fantastic.
Come on, Billy, it's
Mike,
that's it, yeah, Mike. Come. Did Mike get on stage?
I don't know.
I missed this because I saw him shouting for it. And I think somebody will be able to tell me.
I'm sure your comments are, as ever, you know, if you saw Mike, let us know. He was also nominated for Album of the Year, which he didn't win. Mumford & Sons won that. And that was the big award. That was the sort of notion of this year's Brits, was that it was all about the music. I tend to think that's an incorrect assumption. I don't think anybody who puts the telly on at 8 o'clock to ITV1 exactly. is looking to hear about the future of rock and roll when they watch the Brits. What they actually want to see is, you know, ladies in their pants and fireworks and stuff going wrong and all that kind of thing.
Well, Rihanna certainly gave us that, didn't she? She just turned up in basically a pair of M&S support spanks.
She gave us all, there was high fireworks and she sort of weird miming where she just pointed.
Where she just doesn't bother.
Didn't bother. I'm just here.
I'll just do this line and I'll just busk it for a bit.
What I thought was interesting was they obviously shied away from manufactured pop, Justin Bieber aside. You know, nothing for Ollie Murs, he went home empty-handed.
Too right.
But as far as I could gather on the telly, the biggest crowd reaction of the night came when Cheryl Cole came on stage to give an award.
Well, she's the most famous person in the room, wasn't she? I mean, that's not to be... doesn't come as a surprise.
Out the nominations like this. It was really weird.
She was obviously been taking dictation.
Whatever it's called.
She'd been taking lessons from the person, the woman that was doing the voiceover.
Yeah.
Who sounded like her world was ending. She sounded like she'd been dumped before the ceremony.
Somebody got in touch and said, is that you doing the voiceover?
What, to you?
Yeah.
Unnecessary, isn't it?
It is, Charles is going to say, she is, you know, she's the person on the cover of The Sun today, and in a way that's sort of the slight letdown of the Brits this year. The best, you know, the big news story that comes out of it is that Cheryl Cole went to it.
There's
not a kind of a moment that everyone can really gather around and say that was particularly amazing, or some event happened, and there were no kind of amazing collaborations. Paloma Faith was
Paloma. Oh, that was terrible.
Sort of feel like it a bit better than that.
When they walked down the kind of the catwalk together, her and CeeLo, it just looked like Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Yes.
They just look, you know,
that
he just
exactly
looked like
what
a little Oompa Loompa, and she looked like something that had just been, you know, hit with a wand and turned into something.
She was also singing very, very badly, I thought.
It's all really theatrics.
Wildly off key.
I do quite like her.
Do you?
I don't know a lot about her music, but to me, she brightens a room when she's on something, and I think that there's so many people that can't do that. You know, there's so many people that can't, that haven't got that kind of 80s pop star thing where they just come on and just speak.
As was demonstrated last night, actually,
and that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen anymore. People are too scared to speak, and she just comes on. But Adele's got that too.
Yeah,
Adele's just adorable, you know.
Let's talk a bit about Mumford & Sons, who we have a clip of, actually. Here they are talking about their new album plans. We're all very excited to hear about that.
We just got back from Nashville. We were actually in Nashville before going to the Grammys. We spent some time in a farmhouse writing some songs. We've been writing beforehand on tour, and some people have heard some new songs already. and we'll just see how it, we'll see how it goes. We're taking our time. There's like no rush in our mind. I hope people are patient, and we just want to do the best that we can do with it. Just don't rush us, because it won't be any good.
No, I have no patience. I don't know about you. I cannot. I won't sleep until Mumford's out, until I hear Mumford's next album.
Mumford & Sons' album was out a couple of years ago, right? Wasn't it out at the end of 2009?
Somebody else said this morning on Twitter, I noticed. I couldn't confirm or deny that. Why does everybody hate them so much?
Because they sound like the Country Life advert.
Because I think,
is that the same one?
No, you mean the butter.
The butter.
We are the lads from Country Life.
That I nearly wrote that on my live blog last night. It reminds me of that bit where he goes about farmers. It's their lifestyle choice.
It's very odd though, because when I was sort of on Twitter last night, you were getting these bewildered tweets from the colonies, frankly, or the former colonies. Going, why does everyone in England hate Mumford and Sons so much? Because they've just skyrocketed in America.
Oh, Australians, it's the James Blunt thing again. You know what? I got on the boat to the OT yesterday, and the first person on, James Blunt, had a lovely chat with him.
Really?
We had a little chat about the whole thing with his mum, and his mum, you know, responding on the blog to the Radio 4 thing about poshness in music. Mm. You followed the story where she...
Yeah. Just she in case he got too cool.
...wrote in, and he was quite sweet about it. So, well, she's my mum, and, you know, and she was making... I think Mrs. Blunt was making, or Mrs. Blount, sorry, was making the same point. There's a lot of haters in this country. The rest of the world, they don't get it. You know?
No. I mean, I think that the
silly
argument...
rest of the world, I think.
Of course. I think the argument about class regarding Mumford and Sons is actually a specious one, and it's something that gets attached to bands that people just plumb don't like, and then they go, oh, they're posh as well. Because nobody... It's not like anybody goes, I'll tell you what, I never listened to Nick Drake. You know, Nick Drake was like the poshest man. If you ever heard Nick Drake speak, you know, he's basically so posh he's incomprehensible. So
I suppose it's because he killed himself before you could actually begin to hate him.
He saw it coming.
The reason we finally got to the bottom of the mystery of Nick Drake's suicide.
If it, you know, this is it. If he'd have, you know, even if he hadn't have had depression, if he'd probably heard what people said about him on Twitter. Probably kill himself.
Who is this Nick Drake? Is it Drake? Is it Drake Aubrey? Is that who they're talking about?
Why do you think people hate Mumford & Sons?
I think people hate Mumford & Sons because their music is ever so slightly vacuous. It achieves the same things that Coldplay achieve. It's in, you know, it's full of theatrics. It has all the dynamics that you want on stage between, this is the bit where you're supposed to, you know, stand still and listen to it going, and now we're going to get really loud, and nothing is really being said. I don't think it's because they're, I mean, I don't hate bands whether they're because they're posh or not posh, and so I don't always believe that's the motivation behind people taking a band to their heart or otherwise. So I agree. I think it's just an additional thing for people to dislike. But I think when it comes down to it, they have the veneer of saying a lot, but they don't say very much in
talking
their music.
Talking now but saying nothing, as James Brown would have said if he'd ever heard
Mumford. Do you believe, Alexis, this is a revival of folk music in this country? That's one line coming out of last night, because
no.
Lord Marley wins and Mumford's win, and everyone calls them a folk band.
They have nothing
not,
to do with folk music
folk
at all.
They're like Johnny Flynn or something like that.
No, or they're not even like...
Just who I love.
Well, they're not even like Alistair Roberts or any of... There's lots of people, you know, maybe that's a reason that people object to them a little bit, is there's been a lot of this music over the last 5 or 6 years. A lot of which is extremely good. You know, there's people really in there at the start when it was very uncool to be a folk act, going, no, British folk is amazing, it's cool. Brought it forward, and nobody gave them monkeys. And then Marcus and his chums come along, and that's the thing that's being heralded, and it's patent, it's probably, you can probably empirically prove it's not as good as...
The Fence Collective stuff,
or Tongue, or you know what I mean.
That's
lots
a very
of these
good
kind
point.
Of
I think that's probably.
So it is the kind of, you know, the early evening ITV version of the sort of new folk thing. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
And the fact that they dress the way they do
when they're from Barnes,
but it's also like, we're going to make this kind of music. Is this what you wear when you make this?
It would have been nice. We were saying earlier, they played the Grammys at the weekend as well. And the Grammys, they were on stage with Bob Dylan. They did their song, and then the Avett brothers came on and did theirs. And then both bands were on stage with Bob Dylan, who just, as the band were playing, I think, decided which song it would be. And it was all the kind of typical confusion. But it would have been nice last night if Mumford suddenly said, and our special guest, Martin Carthy, and brought him on or someone like that. But that was never going to happen, you know.
But can you not have either massive success or credibility, and you know they'll have this massive success, and I bet they are eaten up every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
And saying why do people not like us? Why do people not like us? If they'd hardly sold anything, then people would be kind of remembering that great time they went to see them at, you know, the Bull and Rat. And there were 17 people there, and they actually had their nose in, you know, Marcus's navel because they were so close. They could smell the mead that he was drinking.
So it's a function, perhaps, of the success, because otherwise no one would have noticed them. So the general consensus of opinion seems to have been that the Brits... It was not a vintage year for the Brits.
No.
I think it's hard to argue with a lot of the people that won, particularly if you look in the context of the people they were up against. You know, I think you can probably empirically prove, even if you hate the Arcade Fire, that it's a better record than Katy Perry's album, in the same sense that it's, you know, I'd rather listen to the Arcade Fire's
I
album.
I did like how happy they looked to have won.
What's he done with his hair? Has he done that for comic relief, do you think? Just remarkable looking haircut. Yeah, they did seem very perky.
And it's not. I wouldn't have expected it. I thought they would have turned up and been all sulky and said something fairly obtuse, and they were like, this is awesome!
They look quite perky, but they also all look quite ill, don't they? Like they look like they've got that kind of stage makeup on. You know, on Boardwalk Empire, where people, you know, if you see people, like, all the actors are kind of made to look as if it's the 20s and there's no vitamins. They haven't invented vitamins. And everyone's got that kind of slightly green, pallid sheen to them. And that's exactly what they look like. They look like they... this thing about Arcade Fire is they look that even though they've got a lot of money, they still all share one hotel room.
Yeah, absolutely. Arguments about the sink, who gets to use the sink first, that kind of... Yeah, no, absolutely.
I think that undercut's very difficult. On the side of your head, that undercut is really difficult to take off because it's like it's so easily done and you think it looks great, but you will look like you're suffering from some kind of long-term illness that you're needing to fight back from. And that's good. That's good. The kids love it, obviously.
Indeed. What do we think could be done to improve the Brits next year?
I think they need to stop trying to improve the Brits. It's never going to be what the Grammys are. It's never going to achieve those lofty heights of slickness and glamour. We're just not capable of doing it in this country. And they need to let go of the reins a little bit, because otherwise you just get this fairly standard evening that's actually quite unmemorable. And what you really want is for things to mess up, as Grace was pointing out on the, was it ITV2 post-Brits?
Yeah, when Peter Andre... basically kind of got halfway through an interview and then forgot he was live and thought he could go back to the beginning, and that was absolutely brilliant.
just
kind of stood saying, no, I'll do that again. But then that's Peter Andre.
I mean, isn't that what people want? They want that kind of...
I think you've keyed into a fundamental thing about the difference between American pop and British pop. And American pop stars tend to be incredibly slick and orthodontically perfect and this kind of thing, whereas pop stars in Britain traditionally are slightly wonky. You know, we're the country that gave the world Dave Hill from Slade. We're the country that gave the world Nicola from Girls Aloud. You know, not Justin Bieber. You know, it's people like Robbie Williams. He's got a peculiar guy. He's always got all these problems and stuff like that. And maybe the Brits should tap into the essential wonkiness.
But we're not that cool. That's the thing. We're not as, you know, you look at the American Awards ceremonies and everybody's, you know, and it's very glitzy and it's just got that real sense of this kind of like triple A level glamour. And then, you know, you looked at the Twitter feed yesterday. How excited were the greatest names in the music industry that they were going to get on a free boat? Oh, I'm getting on a boat. Oh, I'm getting on a boat. It's like, you know, you can get on that clipper for £4 any day, mate. You know, get yourself a Smirnoff Ice, live. It's like, and they were going, and I just thought that was really funny.
I think that was maybe down to the slight end of daysness of those parties. Because,
absolutely.
If you know, it's the music industry is clearly tanking. EMI's party was actually on a boat, which is amazing, given the state of EMI. So that's a listing slightly, and people are bailing it out with buckets, you know. And I think Casper, you went to some of these parties. Like Hitler's bunker at the end of Downfall? Was it just people?
Not exactly. No, it was a big room at the Savoy, one of them, the Universal Party. Young people having a nice time, you know. But it was definitely a kind of feel that the industry is on its last legs and they may as well just chuck money at the problem, you know.
Mm.
But I don't know what else they're going to do, you know. Rather that than they all go home and sit in a quiet, dark room on their own and feel miserable. It was nice.
I think it's exciting.
Okay, that's what...
Becker, that's what I thought last night. I mean, I thought that was a good Brits moment when Boris Becker comes up to hand out an award. You think, where have they brought him from? Why is that?
Somebody's dropped out, haven't they?
The absolute brilliant randomness of that I thought was good, and kind of in that enjoyable Brits tradition.
Mm. I suppose at least when he's on the stage, at least his wife knows where he is.
And on that note, and on that bombshell, thank you very much to everybody
thank
who came
you.
In. Thank you, Grace. No thank
problem.
You, Rosie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Casper. I'll let you get back
thank
to your
you.
Bed
I'll
now.
Have a little light down.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back next week with a normal Guardian Weekly music
boo.
Podcast.
Yeah. Boo.
My thanks, as ever, to our producer, Scott. I'm Alexis Petridis. Thank you very much for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.